evening. It's good to be with you folks here again. It's been a number of years, I think, since we've been back here. I believe it was 1996, if my memory serves me correctly, that we were here and shared a little bit about the work that we are involved in Botswana. I don't think we had our boys with us at that time, but I do see a photograph on the board back there, and as you can see, they've grown since that time. Our middle son decided to stay home tonight, but we do have the youngest and the oldest with us. I would like to read a passage together, please, in the Bible, in the book of Psalms, book of Psalm 127. I want to read about a particular truth that has been important to us, especially in the last 2 years on the field. It has been a rather difficult 2 years. I'll explain that in detail in a few moments. But let's read Psalm 127, and we'll read the first verse and the second verse. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep. That's all I'm going to read this evening, and I just trust the Lord will bless his word to us, and that he would help me just to speak a little bit about these things. Now, perhaps there are some here tonight who aren't familiar with the Halsband family. We've been serving the Lord in this country called Botswana for 10 years now. We went out in November of 1991, commended by Shore Acres Bible Chapel in Burlington, Ontario. And just very briefly, I want to fill you in that the first year was a rather difficult year for us. Most of you might remember that within the first 6 months, I became very ill with TB meningitis, and I had to come home. And we were desperately sick at that time. I was paralyzed from the waist down, and it took 18 months of rehab and physiotherapy to get me back on my feet again. And after that 18-month period of physiotherapy, we were able to return in November of 1993, and we again joined the work in the capital city called Habaroni, where we were working with a couple from Northern Ireland, Dr. Clark and Hazel Logan. They're not related to the Logans that many people think of when we think of Africa and Logan. It's a completely different family. But they are a great couple, a godly couple, a great example to us, and they taught us the language of Setswana, which is what we speak in that country. Now, after being with them for another 6 months, so we were with them in total now about a year, we had decided to move to the northern part of the country where there was no assembly testimony. And we found ourselves in this village called Maun, M-A-U-N, Maun. It's right on the tip of the Okavango Delta. It's near also the Kalahari Desert. And it's a very hot place. It is also happens to be the base for all the safari companies that come to Botswana whose clients, they want to go out and see the wildlife. Some want to shoot with cameras, and some want to shoot with something a bit more devastating, like a rifle. But there's lots of hunting available, and consequently, our African village is quite unique in the sense that we're not suffering like a lot of the smaller African villages. We have grocery stores that are well stocked, because a lot of these clients that come into Botswana who go into the safaris, some of them are even paying up to $1,500 US a day to spend in this camp. And of course, they are fed very well, and they need the place where they buy all their groceries, of course, is in our village. So we have a lot of facilities in our little African village that are make it nice for us. We have good grocery stores. We have telephone. We even have cellular phone. We have internet and email. And all these facilities have made us very comfortable in that village. Now, when we first started in July of 1994, we were able to buy a piece of land where we started to build our house. And the first thing that we started to do, of course, is preach the gospel. And it was very simple. We had shade underneath a tree. We had some bricks that we set up, and then a plank across the bricks. And all the neighborhood children wanted to see what these white folk were doing in their neighborhood, and so they came, and we started a little Sunday school. And as we continued to witness to these folks and to their parents, the Lord gave us a few souls. And after a year of preaching, there was a small nucleus gathered together, and we felt the time had come where we could start to remember the Lord as an assembly. And in the spring of 1995, we broke bread for the first time. It was an Easter weekend, and we were able to start to remember the Lord. Now, one of the first projects that we got involved with was the prison project. What initially happened, how this started, was the prison chaplain, who came just down the road where the prison is, they came to our house, and he recognized the name of our church, which in Setswana is called Into Yaifangheli, which means the house of the gospel. And it is the same name that has been used by the earlier missionaries in 35 years ago, that earlier missionaries from Scotland had used. And he also had preached in the prison. Now, this prison chaplain was associated, had known this name before, and recognized that this is a real Bible-believing church. And the prison chaplain was a real born-again believer. And he asked me and invited me to come and teach the gospel, teach the scriptures to the prison officer. So we jumped at that opportunity. And so every Wednesday morning at 7:30 in the morning, we have half an hour with the prison officers where we're able to teach them the scriptures. But then things began to expand a bit, and they said, listen, we have a big prison farm, which is about 20 miles in the bush, or 20 kilometers in the bush. And they said, could you come and teach the prisoners there? So we started going there, and I have a fairly large Bible class now of about 85 men in that prison. And we go there every second week, and we teach the scriptures. We usually spend about an hour and a half with these men teaching the scriptures, answering their questions, and that sort of thing. Very shortly after starting that work, there was a young man in there who came to know the Lord as his Savior. And we were very excited about this. And the time of his release was fast approaching, and we weren't exactly sure what to do for him. You see, in Botswana, there's absolutely no social net for the people when they're released from prison. They are literally dumped on the street with the clothes that they were arrested in, which could have been 5, 10, or even 15 years earlier. And there's no job for them. There's no social assistance. And the families generally don't want to have much to do with them. They don't trust them. And again, most of the people at large don't trust them and won't hire them. So this young man of who was about to be released, we felt a somewhat of a responsibility to help him. He was a Christian brother now. And so we prayed about it, and the idea came into our mind to start something that we could employ these men and women when they are released from prison and give them a little bit of social assistance, but also have an opportunity to continue to teach them the scriptures. So what we did is we formed what is called MIP, or Maung Integration Project. And the purpose of it is to make the transition from prison back into society as smoothly as possible. But the primary focus, of course, is to continue to teach and preach the gospel to these men and women. So what did we do? We wanted to think of something that would be simple, that everybody could do, and the thing that came to our mind was to build bricks. Now, bricks are used every day over there. They don't build with timber like you do on this side of the world. They use these small little bricks or a little bit bigger blocks, and they're made out of cement and sand, and everybody uses them, and there was a market for that, and so we started to build bricks, and that was something we didn't know anything about. Lele Kanye, this is the man we're talking about, he came out, and we asked somebody to show us how to make bricks, and within half an hour, we were in production, in business, and so we started to make bricks. Eventually, my plot was beginning to look more like a brickyard than a home, so we were able to lease a plot just three or four plots down from my house, and there we started the brick project on a more of an official scale. We put up a sign and that sort of thing. And it has come along very well. Now, part of the prerequisites or part of the requirements to be an applicant to or to be a participant in MIP is that they must attend two gospel services a week at the assembly. Now, in our assembly, we have two gospel services a week because we have usually more unsaved people attending our meetings than we have Christians. So we take the opportunity to preach the gospel at every occasion. So 11 o'clock on Sunday morning, and again Thursday evening at 6:30 in the evening, there's a gospel service, and these prisoners are expected to be there. And so that's generally not a problem. They understand that this is part of their part of the rehab. We sometimes get a few problems. They said, well, we have our own church, this, that, and the other thing, but we just say, listen, this is just part of the program. You either come to this church, listen to the Word of God, or you'll have to find someone else to employ you. And usually that's not a problem, big enough incentive, and they come. So we continued with that, and we did have a bit of a problem this last year and a half. What the government had started to do was they started a financial assistance program where they were trying to put money in the hands of the people in order to give them the wherewithal to start little businesses. And it was a good idea, but not a whole lot of forethought had gone into it. A lot of the people thought, good, fast, easy money coming from the government for free. And there was no real research done as to the logistics of their enterprise, whatever they wanted to do. And unfortunately, most of these people, well, I shouldn't say most, but many of these people decided to do what we were doing, building bricks. And so every street at the corner, there was another guy doing the same thing. And consequently, for about 4 or 5 months, maybe even 6 months, last year, the bricks were piling up, and we didn't sell one brick, and of course that became expensive because at the month end when you had to pay the wages, you have to pay the cement bill, you have to pay the sand bill, the water bill, the rent, all this sort of thing, it came out of my pocket with nothing coming back in. So we were faced after about 5 or 6 months with no sales, and we really were before the Lord as to what to do with this, and we felt, well, maybe the time had come that we should close the project down. But before I did that, I thought, let me just have another look in the village and see what's going on. And I began to realize that I'm not in this for the money. I'm simply in this as a make-work project for these people. And we're only here trying to help the people. Why is it that I can't drop the prices so low that nobody is even going to be interested in competing with us? And so that's what we did. And within 2 weeks, all of our bricks were sold, and we had more customers than we had inventory. And over the last year, we have seen a lot of these fast-starting brick projects around started to fold up, and the machines are for sale and that sort of thing. So we weren't out there to cause any sort of you know how you have price wars here, gas wars? Well, we had brick wars over there without throwing bricks. And but anyways, we won, and we are known now as the Brick King in the village, and we are able to carry on with the project. Let me just talk one more thing. I'm telling you a little bit about a high school that we do. We do various different things that we're involved in, but the two most rewarding is the prison work and the high school. In the high school, it's a senior secondary school. There's about 1,500 students there, and most of them come from unsaved homes, and there's many of them that are boarders. Probably 700 or 800 of them are boarders in the school. Now, the schools in Botswana, the prisons, the police force, anywhere you go, the hospitals are wide open for the gospel. If you're interested in preaching the gospel, there's absolutely no restriction there whatsoever. You're welcome, and they appreciate missionaries. They have respect for the Word of God, and we're so thankful for the open door. Now, what we do is in the high school, we have a Bible study weekly with those who are interested from the assembly who go there, and it's also an outreach to other people. Now, we haven't found so much that this particular Bible study is an outreach to the unsaved as it is an opportunity to share New Testament principles with a lot of Christians who are confused on various issues, whether it be eternal security or one big problem that we have in that part of the country, which is sort of unique, is the observance of the Sabbath. And many of the churches there teach that you must observe the Sabbath. And so we have had a great opportunity to share the truth of the Scriptures with many of these young folk. And as a result, some of them have felt that they were not receiving food from the churches that they had been attending and have come over and joined us and come into fellowship in the assembly in Maun. And we are thankful for that, but we are very careful when they do come. We ask them to go and speak first to their pastor and their elder or whoever they are and explain the situation and give them the opportunity to be talked out of it, if that is the case, because we want people to come out of conviction and not because we happen to be the popular flavor of the month. And so it has worked out well, and we thank the Lord for that. Now, in the assembly, I'm just going to talk a little bit now about an area, a subject that we haven't felt free to write to people about because we didn't want people's minds to be suspecting things and maybe just imagining things. And so now that I'm face to face with you, I want to be completely blunt and honest with the difficulty that we have had. Last furlough, there was a man who came from Zambia. He'd been in the country for several years, and he married one of our girls, a Motswana girl. And he came from an assembly in Zambia and appeared very serious and a consistent Christian. And we had asked him to help us on the oversight. This was about 6 months prior to our last furlough, which was 2 years ago. And there was only Salelo, that's the Motswana, the African brother, and myself on the oversight. And so we asked this other brother, this African brother, to join us. And he did come and join us on the oversight. And we felt it was a bit of a stability issue that needed to be addressed because we were going to be gone for a few months at a time, being on furlough. And so he helped us. Now, unfortunately, there was a moral issue that had taken place that we did not know anything about. And apparently his past in Zambia was somewhat checkered, which we did not know anything about either. And this man was, it appeared he had become unfaithful to his wife while we were on furlough last time. Then we arrived on the situation, and it was a very, very ugly domestic situation. The wife was staying in one separate bedroom, and he was in the other bedroom, and she wouldn't talk to him, and he couldn't understand why she wouldn't talk to him. And as she began to find evidence that proved that he had been unfaithful, he became violent and physically assaulted her, and we were called into the situation. And of course, you can understand that this was very, very difficult. Now, it's even more difficult in Africa than in America or Canada. You see, in Africa, it is acceptable in the custom, in the culture, that if your wife steps out of line, you just smack her around and get her back into line. And this is the accepted way of behavior. Not amongst the Christians, but amongst Africans generally. And of course, when he did that, we took a very, very strong view against that, and we had him disciplined, and he had to step down from the oversight, of course. And but he was not happy with that and was very resentful against me. He felt that we were imposing white standards on the Africans instead of biblical standards. And so some of the believers in the assembly were sympathetic with this man, and this man was very, very good at hiding his checkered past. He was very good at dividing the assembly. And there were many, many nights where my wife and I felt the whole thing was going to crumble all down by our ears. We felt the whole assembly was going to be destroyed and the work of God was destroyed. And many a night, my wife and I had to comfort each other with the very thought of these verses here. Except the Lord did build a house, they labor in vain that build it. And except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. And we had to come to the understanding that this is not my assembly, this is God's assembly. And that was driven home to our hearts so powerfully that we had not the shoulders wide enough or broad enough to bear the burden of this thing. And we could see the whole thing crumbling. And we felt, well, if this is just our work, let it crumble. But if it isn't, if it's God's work, it'll stand. And we will try and be faithful. And we do not go about vindicating what we had done, but it did cause some very difficult times for about a year and a half, where there was mistrust, there was bitterness, there was just unrest in the assembly. But the Lord had, I think, vindicated us and vindicated this young woman as well, that this man eventually, his true colors were made known, and now he is living with another woman. And the whole thing now has become much more comfortable, in the sense that those that had been sympathetic towards him are beginning to see that, well, they're obviously seeing now that they were wrong, and that they are starting to warm up to this lady who had been shoved aside as a troublemaker. And so this is the issue that we faced, and it was a very, very difficult one. And we do, ask you to continue to pray. Sometimes you pray for the missionaries, and you don't know exactly a specific thing. And these are issues that might be arising, and we do thank the Lord for those who have just prayed. The Lord knows, and we're not always at liberty to express exactly the details of a problem, but we do thank the Lord for those who held us up in prayer. Now, I've talked long enough just now, and I think I would like to just take a few moments and very quickly go through these slides, and then after which I'm going to offer the a few questions if there's time, and then we'll end in a time of prayer. Can everyone hear me? Is this mic loud enough? Okay. In case you are wondering where Botswana was, you can see that we share borders with these various countries in the southern tip of Africa. Now, this is a... focusing that sun? There you are. This is my fellow elder. His name is Salelo. He married this lady here. She is a missionary who came out to serve the Lord, and she led this man to the Lord, and then they eventually got married. That's one way of getting a husband, I guess. And they have these here lovely twins, Tseko Fatso and Solofelo. This is the oldest one here. And then they went to Jenny. They call this one Jenny. So they've given up on the Setswana names and have gone with English. Now, this is the believers who are in fellowship right now. We have about Well, there's about 25 or 30 believers in fellowship. They're not all here at this time. Can you just sharpen that up a bit, son, please? But on any given Sunday, we have a good number of folk come along. This is a typical Sunday. We have a Sunday school of about 150 children. And this is how we transport them. And this is the first guy that got saved in the prison. Leila Tanya is his name. We've now hired him as the project manager. And so he's in charge of it. And I just sort of manage it from an arm's length. It's always interesting to see what these men buy when you give them the first paycheck. You would think, well, he's going to buy some clothes or some food. But you know what he bought? A new pair of sunglasses. And he's just sporting them there. And it sort of made him dignified. It made him feel like he was a person again. We have this temporary chapel that we built just on our plot. And we break up into Sunday school classes. And we encourage our young folk to teach the Bible classes. Here we have these three young guys who are teaching this one. And Jane's teaching that one. Now, at the end of the year, we have prize giving in November. And often we receive clothing from Canada, the U.S., and the U.K. And we give the children these prizes at the end of the year, depending on how often they have attended Sunday school. So if they get a perfect attendance without any misses at all, then they get usually two or three different sets of clothing. And it's well appreciated by the parents as well as the children. It's sometimes the only clothing that they get. He's all ready for the meeting, you can tell that. And they're very happy to receive that sort of thing. This fella here, he got saved about 6 years ago. He's blind, and he just shuffles along. We are happy to have him join us. And just a few African faces. They love to get their picture taken. All you have to do is aim the camera in one particular spot, and they all flock to that area to get into the picture. Now, this is another thing that we have. We have a monthly young people's class, and usually it's a volleyball game, and we have a meal together, and then we get into the scriptures. Now, just in the last couple of weeks before we left Botswana, Salelo was able to find this piece of land. It's right in the heart of the village, actually, even though you don't see many houses around. But this is 100 meters by 100 meters, and we're going to try and buy this. The assembly's going to try and buy it, I should say, to start to build our chapel on. We've been meeting for about 6 years now in our plot, and we're beginning to realize that the time has come for the assembly to be completely independent and feel that they own their own building and that sort of thing. So we're looking to the Lord for direction in that next little sphere. This is a craft class that Karen and Jane teach once a week. They have the young girls come together and they teach them special Bible courses, usually on moral issues, because teenage pregnancy is quite a common occurrence, and AIDS is a terrible epidemic right now. I'll give you some statistics on that later on at the end of the meeting. But here's some of the work that they come up with. Once a month, I set up the book table here, and Andrew and Jonathan and Nicholas often help me with this. There's this lady here. She's a believer in the assembly. She lives in a village about 2 hours away. And we came to visit her on this weekend and brought the book table, and we give away Christian literature and tracts and sell Bibles. These are some of the books that we use. A lot of them are written by Doc Harlow and EPI Publications. There's one there. This is the Church of the Book, and this is Can We Know God? We have translated them into Setswana. That's 12 bottles of milk there, and we use them. Now, this is the monthly gospel meeting at the high school that I told you about. And on one occasion, as I was teaching on the Sabbath, it was amazing. The kids, they didn't have any pieces of paper to write the verses on. And so I started pulling out verses out of the Bible that showed that the first day of the week was a special day to the Christian. they were quickly writing verses all over their arms, and it was amazing. By the time the meeting was over, they all were tattooed with Bible verses up and down their arms. It was tremendous to see. Karen is a registered nurse and does a great work with just normal or just everyday practical nursing care. And also, she is our correspondence person, and it's a great help. It's a lot of work keeping up with correspondence, and of course she's busy homeschooling the boys as well, and you can just remember to pray for her. It's always easy to get behind in your correspondence. This is some of the problems that we have in the country. This is called a church. This is Cornelius Christian Church, and this is a typical Christian church in the country. And really what it is, it's a mix-up between animism and Christianity. You often will find these people you can be walking down the road and you hear them singing, but when you go in behind here, you might find that they just had an animal sacrifice to the ancestral spirits, and they're dancing around the fire singing Amazing Grace all at the same time. Here's another group that is quite prevalent in the country. This is called ZCC, or Zionist Christian Church. They have some really strange doctrines. They give out uniforms to their church members. Well, actually, they don't give them out. They sell them. And they love uniforms. If we gave out uniforms in our church, we'd pack it out every night. But here we are. These guys here believe that when they jump up and down and they stamp their feet down, and they believe they're actually stamping on the devil when they do this. And here they are jumping up and down, and they saw me parked there taking pictures, and they thought, boy, let's give this guy a really good show. So they went dancing back and forth in front of me here, and that was it. Here's a lady. This is just some common sights that you might see in the village, and a lady just out in the open air making dresses in a barbershop. And a scotch cart, a little corner shop. You can buy milk and Coke. Well, you can buy milk there, but you buy Coke and actually, you could buy boxed milk there. Here's a butcher shop. Now, remember what I said. We have modern shopping facilities as well, but this is what you would see out in the market. This is what people would buy. This is incredible. The flies swarming around, the dogs, snipping at the food whenever they get a chance, and you come over there and you want a hunk of this, and they carve it off, and they have dirty hands, and into a plastic bag, and I don't know, it's pretty disgusting, but they seem to enjoy it. Here are these ladies, marketplace here. I give them some Christian books here, and they're selling watermelon or mahapu in Setswana, and gospel tracts. Here's the prison officers that we meet with every week. This is really encouraging. I just love coming to these people. And I get about a 95% participation or attendance. And these men and women do not have to come, but they enjoy coming, and we try and make it interesting to them. And it's been incredible. I've just finished going through Firm Foundations from Creation to Christ. So just before we came away, we had finished that book. And that was about 3 years going. Now here, a couple of the lady officers. So when I go to visit the women prisoners, one or two of these ladies will accompany me there. This is the brick project here, MIP, Maun Integration Project. You can see the bricks piled up. And these are some of the guys working at the project. Here, these are the 4.5-inch blocks. They're the bigger ones. And then we also, that's Lila Kanye. He's the project manager. And there you have the stock bricks, the smaller ones. And this is what we use to build our house and our garage. Here you see him with his calculator. He calls it a calculator. He can't seem to pronounce it very well, but a calculator. And there's his little mold there that he makes these bricks. There's the sand and cement. You mix it together. You put it in the mold. Well, here's a guy here putting it in the mold, and you pack it down, and then you turn it upside down, and out comes a block like that. And they keep it moist for about a week, and then we can sell them, and that's how we keep the project going. Here they are loading up my truck. Now, this is our house over here, and there's our neighbors here. We're building a brick wall now because I'm getting tired of their roosters crowing into my bedroom window every morning at 4 and 3 in the morning. So they're trying to dampen the noise a little bit. Now, we had a visitor from Canada come out to visit us. This is Bill. So we call this Adventures with Bill. And we went out into the bush, out into the delta. And you see how Jonathan is just holding on to the side there. He's standing on the side. And you run into stuff like this. These are called warthogs and impala and hippopotamus and giraffe. So this is all out in the wild, okay? This is not in a game park or anything like this. This is, we see these things crossing the highway as we're, you know, traveling from one place to the other. This is the Cape water buffalo. These are the ones that have a reputation for killing tourists, as a lot of people just think they're a big dumb-looking cow, and so they get out of the car and try and get a picture, but you can see his hair standing up on the back of his neck there. He's not pleased about me. And an elephant again. This is, again, quite interesting. We have the largest herds in the world in Botswana. We have 60,000 elephants. And they actually, about 3 years ago, started hunting again for elephant. It's very controlled, but we have so many elephants, you can apply for a permit to hunt them. And that's a big one there. You're traveling down the road, and you see something like this on the side of the road, and you wonder, what's that? And you stop, and out pop these two heads, vultures. And they've just had a meal, and there's what's three, that's what they're eating. That's a dead donkey. It's been hit by a car on the side of the road. And this is a black mamba. This is one of the most ferocious snakes in Botswana, actually in Africa. It's called two-step in Setswana. They call it two-step because you only get about two steps after being bitten by it. It's one of the most aggressive snakes alive. In fact, one of the men in our assembly, his name is Dan. We call him Dangerous Dan because he's always finding some disaster. Anyways, he was traveling down the highway, and this little boy had to go to the toilet, so he stopped the side of the road, and this little boy went in the bush. And he was taking longer than he should have, so Dan got out to look for him, and he found him, just as he saw him, there was this black mamba. And black mambas are aggressive. They'll go after you. And so he quickly threw the boy in the car, and he jumped in the car and started off down the highway. And if he looked in his rearview mirror, this thing was chasing them down the highway. So he turned around and ran over it two or three times. Then put it in a plastic bag and threw it in our yard because he knows our boys like to skin these things and make belts out of them. So there's the black mamba. This is a little squirrel. Now, here we are. You're just traveling down the road, and this is so exciting. The boys are outside on the standing on the side of the truck, and all of a sudden, boom, boom, they're in the car. I wonder what the problem was. And then I stopped, and here these elephants, they're lying. They're sitting right on the side of the road. And that was, right in front of us. It was quite amazing. Now, this was a very exciting time for us as well. This is the first time I've ever seen a leopard. And this leopard here was on a trail. Here you can see the road. This is a little trail in the bush. And he was spraying urine on the grass, marking his territory. And he saw us, and we were just sort of like part of the countryside in the vehicle. We're safe in the vehicle. And he thought he'd roll around a bit in the grass. Like, it looks like a little pussycat. It was amazing. And, of course, we like a little bit of fishing. There's Andrew. This is called the fighting tiger African tiger fish. They're related to the piranha, the cousin of the piranha. And there we are going down the river, and there's a fish eagle. He's been up on the perch there, and he loves these tiger fish. And you can see him coming up, and boom, there goes my fish. That's a lovely picture. I like that one. And there's a sad fisherman. He lost his fish. And this is my wife's idea. This is the last picture, and she calls it the end. You got that one, but... I think we're probably a bit over time, are we? Probably not too much time for questions, but let me just make a comment, and then if you have a question, you're on your own. You keep asking questions, I'll answer them, but you have no one to blame for being late than yourselves, all right? I just wanted you to remember to pray in a special way for the country right now because of the AIDS epidemic. You know, 2 years ago, Botswana became famous for two reasons. Miss Universe, and we're number one country in the world for AIDS. Nationally, right across the country, 25% of the population is HIV positive. Now, it gets worse. When you get into the village, like our village of Maun, the age between 18 and 49, the ratio is 66%. Two out of three people are HIV positive in that age group, 18 to 49. Now you can just imagine what that is doing to the country. People are dying left and right, and it's all the young people, you know, 30 years old is the prime age where these people are dying. Right now we have a life expectancy of around 42. By the year 2010, our life expectancy is going to be 30. So you can see that this devastation is just gutting the country of its most productive young people, and these people are going out into eternity without Christ. They're leaving orphans behind, and it's a tremendous need in the country right now. And you could just remember to pray that the Lord would speak to these people, because it seems that no matter what happens, they don't want, they know it is sexually transmitted, but it has not affected their behavior whatsoever. And the people are very, very promiscuous, and they just do not want to know their status. There's a big push right now in the country where a campaign is going around to encourage people to get tested so they know whether they're HIV positive or not. And people do not want to know, because the statistics are so high, they know that they're likely going to be positive and they don't want to have to face that issue. Rather, just leave me alone, don't tell me it, just let me do what I want to do. And that's the bottom line. And we have just found that there's been such a disaster to see these men and women. Every week, a stone's throw from our house, there's another fresh funeral. And it's something we just pray that the Lord would work in the hearts of these people to awaken them for their need of Christ as Savior, but also as Lord of life, to give them direction and show them how to live. Now, very briefly, is there a question or anything like that I could maybe answer for you? Yes, sir.